All right, so we're going to be talking about Jesus and disappointments this morning. How did Jesus handle his disappointments is basically the idea. And as we've started each class, we're going to ask ourselves, what can we learn about Jesus today? Very important question for us to be asking in the sense of Jesus is our model, Jesus is our pattern. Thank you, brother. And that works. And so we're going to be looking at how he deals with disappointments because, frankly, we have to deal with disappointments all the time. Major, minor, but we have to deal with them and we can't deal with them any better than Jesus did, so we need to learn from him. Brother Holdeby says in his book, in this lesson we wish to take a look at some of the occasions in which Jesus the man was disappointed. How did he react to his disappointments? How did he handle such situations? And so, what we're going to do at the beginning of our study is look at several verses that show different kinds of disappointments that Jesus had to face. Then we're going to discuss together how he faced those. And then at the end of our study, we're going to look at how we can apply what we learned about Jesus and then look at a couple of verses from Paul that show what Jesus wants us to do in reaction, how to apply the situation. All right, so let's look first at some of the disappointments that Jesus faced, and I think we're going to find that they parallel the disappointments we face in many ways. And so if someone could please turn to Mark 5:17, let's read that, and then discuss the disappointment, what happened to Jesus, and do a little bit of speculation on how we think Jesus probably felt in this situation, and then maybe how we would feel in this situation. So Mark chapter 5, verse 17. Who's willing to read that for us? Brother Ryan?
And they began to implore him to leave their region.
All right. So does any kind of scan through the context? Does any remember who it was and why they were imploring Jesus to leave? Alright, so he had cast out the demons and sent them into the pigs, and this is not a primarily Jewish area, but there are Jews that are there. And so you have the Jesus performing a miracle. Why do you think they wanted him to leave?
Property value, financial aspects.
Alright, so there's some property loss that goes on here. What else? Alright, they're probably afraid of him. Maybe they even see some of the implications of if this man can cast out demons, what's that tell you about the man? He's got some power. He is a good man. And when people are evil, what do they think about good people? You don't like being around good people if you want to live an evil lifestyle, right? Because that is somewhat judgmental, it seems to us, condemns us. In fact, in John chapter 1, whenever Jesus, the light, came into the world, how did people feel about him? They hated him. They rejected him because men love darkness rather than light. And so people didn't like Jesus being around them, especially when they saw his goodness, his power. And how do you think that made Jesus feel? Let's think about Jesus' mission, let's think about his character, and let's think about their reaction to him and how he might have felt about that as a man.
But as a man, we don't like rejection. Mm-hmm. We like to be accepted by our peers, our friends, and even death. But as a God, we knew there was an ulterior motive. Mm-hmm.
So he could see into their motive, and yet, as God and man, he wouldn't like to be rejected. None of us do. Any brother Don?
I mean, there's an advantage to be able to know what people's attitudes and what they're thinking. And I just think he just accepted the fact that, well, I'm not going to be able to do any more good here, so I'm just going to continue.
Absolutely.
And staying alone is why, we have friends and we have family and the Bible, so he had no one.
Yeah. He doesn't have any fears, does he?
He knew what the future was, eternity. Mm-hmm. And they did not. And they really had no idea what they were rejecting. And he knew what they were rejecting.
Mm-hmm. I'm still very sad and discouraging at the time. Yeah.
Absolutely. I want us to think of, I was going to get to that point, and I want us to think about that. When Jesus entered into Jerusalem, what was he doing and how did he feel? At the end of his life.
He came in on a small donkey. So that would be a royalty feeling. And Jesus was a humble servant. I'm sure that made him feel very humble.
Very good. And what I was looking for is he's weeping over Jerusalem as he's there. And why was he weeping over Jerusalem?
He loves them.
He loves them, and what do they do? They're rejecting him. They're not accepting him as he is. And so I think about that here, that yes, Jesus realized what was going on in their hearts, and he realized he had a greater mission, so he probably accepted that he had to move on. But I still feel like there was great pity in his heart as he's leading these people to their own devices. And so you see the rejection, you see the disappointment. Do we ever feel anything like that? Yes. Absolutely. Any other thoughts?
I think sometimes we don't really get into Jesus' emotions. We just think that, you know, he's the Son of God, he's got his mission, he just accepts everything. But, you know, when Lazarus passed away, he saw the people and how they were crying, really got him.
Absolutely. Something I've thought about, and this is somewhat related to it, but Jesus definitely experienced the emotions as a man, but I think those emotions had to have come from somewhere. I think God is the model of perfect emotion and perfect response to an emotion. You know, when I think we sometimes get this picture that because heaven is a place with no crying, God can never be grieved. Well, God can be grieved. That's a specific element, a specific picture in Revelation. It's not that God is just stoic and eternally happy, or however you want to think of it, in heaven. There are emotions that go along with this. And so, yes, Jesus experienced this as a man, but he experienced the same emotion as God, I believe. And so there's some linking here that we don't have to necessarily say the emotional side was man and the will side is God. They're intertwined. The fancy name for that is there is a hypostatic union. You cannot separate the man from the God whenever Jesus is here. They are joined together. All right, does anybody have any additional thoughts on that? All right, so let's go to another passage. Let's go to Matthew chapter 15, verses 15 and 16. This one's going to hit a little closer to home, getting to the friendship aspect and disappointments. Matthew chapter 15, 15 and 16, who has this for us? All right, Brian.
Matthew 15, 15, and 16. Then Peter answered and said to him, explain this parable to us. So Jesus said, are you also still without understanding?
All right, so Jesus is telling parables. He's also here in Matthew 15 condemning those who are the Jewish leaders. And he has this parable, and Peter asks concerning it. And why do you think Peter's question would have disappointed Jesus?
It's like, talking about repeating yourself. You just kept saying the same message over and over. And it's like, instead of saying there's no understanding, it's like, don't you get it?
Yeah.
You know? So I just think frustration.
Exactly. And you can kind of think of it that Jesus would probably expect those who are opposed to him not to get it, but his own disciples and who are getting this private instruction.
I got sympathy for every teacher, because that sounds just like a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I've been studying this for 6 weeks.
Absolutely. And the disciples just aren't getting it. And so you've got the frustration there.
Well, I guess the other thing, like what Kate was saying too, is everybody learns different. Some people are visual, some people, you know, you have to. And he did it every way possible. He gave every kind of different example, everything he could do to make sure everybody's learning was touched. So, yeah, I think he pushed it.
You know, just looking at this kind of holistically, knowing that Jesus was repeating himself and people weren't getting it, and it's a challenge to change people's perspectives, but just looking at Jesus and his continued example, continuing to say the same thing over and over again, knowing that he was being frustrated every single time, And then even at the end, you know, his disciples still weren't there. But he knew, I need to keep telling them, I need to keep saying it. And so just his example of continued diligence is encouraging.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very good. Any additional thoughts there?
Well, it's so hard without hearing it. And telling can make everything. And so when I was having a time, it's kind of hard to know exactly. You know, if I explain to my children all over, they're like, oh, aren't you getting it? Let me show you again. You know, instead of, aren't you getting it? You know, it's just so hard to know without hearing it.
Absolutely. And either way, there's still that disappointment, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Why aren't you getting it? Or why aren't you getting it? Either way, there's still some disappointment.
So this time frame, is it the same as what we see in Acts 10, 14, where Peter is also, once again, I don't get it. Explain this more. No. Is that the same time frame, or are those actually two separate aspects there?
I was thinking about that. I was going to use Peter as an example, that you have fear of him not understanding. You're going to have him denying Jesus. You're going to have, even in his reaffirmation of his love in John chapter 21, but what about this one? And things like that. And then you get, are you going to restore the kingdom in Acts chapter 1? And then everyone can be accepted in Acts chapter 2. And then Acts chapter 10, again, you have the idea of, well, Gentiles. No. And then, what's more, he's seen this. And then the way I date Galatians, the discussion that that Paul is having with Peter when he withstands him to the face is probably when Peter seemingly went up in Acts chapter 11 before Acts chapter 15 and is not going to eat with Gentiles in Antioch. And then you finally get to Acts chapter 15 and he's like, here, this is how God is dealing with the Gentiles. And so you have a lot of growth in Peter. It's developing over time. Ryan, and then Mike.
You know, sometimes when I see these, what we would look at as maybe even a doubting, I tend to do that a lot. It's more because I'm more analytical. It's not that I'm doubting what's happening with me and says, I want to know more. I want to know how is the inner workings making this happen. So it, maybe it comes across more of a doubt or a, I don't believe you. It's just that I want to know more. And so sometimes I wonder if situations like this, if that's not what's going on, is look at what's happening. They're unexplainable to me, and now all of a sudden it's changing. So why? Versus just, I'm just going to follow it.
Absolutely. And I think we get, I'll get to you in just a second, Brother Mike, that we get a little bit of the inner workings of Peter's mind whenever you have the Mount of Transfiguration saying, let's build some tents here so that we can just stay up here. And I think it's Luke who says, he said this because he didn't know what to say. And so he's just speaking. And so, you know, we see some of Peter's impulsiveness. We see some of his questions. I don't think he ever doubted who Jesus was. He just didn't respond appropriately all the time. And so Jesus has to have some very probing questions. And Brother Mike?
Well, the thing we have to understand, too, is as a manager of a company, you understand it's better to get a new person that you can train the way you desire. But if you have somebody that has a like understanding, you have to deprogram them and then reprogram them. That's what we call changing culture. Jesus had to change culture because these men were not, they were young, but they weren't babies. So he had to take all their old training and teaching away and teach them the better way. That's not easy to do sometimes.
Very good. Break them down and build them back up. All right, but they had the right hearts, and they had potential for faith. Does anybody have any additional thoughts on this? All right. Okay, let's go to Matthew 26. We have a little bit longer reading here. And here we're going to see some anger from Jesus, Matthew 26. Who wants to read verses 37 through 47? I think I've had some hands. All right, Brother Eric.
Matthew 26, 37 through 47. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be grieved and distressed. And then he said to them, my soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me. He went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, Father, if it be possible, put this cup past me. Not as I will, but as you will. He came to his disciples and found them sleeping, and said to Peter, so, you men tonight keep watch for an hour. Keep watching, praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again for a second time and prayed, saying, My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done. Again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. He left them again and went away and prayed for a third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to his disciples and said to them, Are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is being betrayed in the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand. And while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, came up, accompanied by a large crowd of swords and clubs, who came from the chief priests and elders of the people. All
right. So, ask the question this way. Was Jesus angry about what was going on here?
Why would be? I know just in the, when you have people who are supposed to be keeping watch and they fall asleep, that's just their mission of their duty, period. And it wasn't just one of them fall asleep, there were multiple. So that makes it worse. Why can't you keep each other awake?
Now, we'll see some understanding in Jesus, at least the explanation of why they were falling asleep, but you know, whether we look at it as anger or disappointment, he has already said, keep watch because I'm grieved to the point of death. I mean, you've got some strong emotions going on in Jesus right now about what's about to happen, and then he says, watch. Now, I think he expects him to watch. He would have given the command to just say, well, I knew you're going to fall asleep anyway. He's saying, keep watch. And there's a command there. What else do you think about this?
So I get this anger from fear. He's careless to tell him, watch lest you fall into temptation. Like it's more, I get it, like this fear for them.
Mm-hmm.
And he has fear for himself and he has fear for them too. Like this is beginning. This is the beginning of my end right here. And I need you guys to be ready and you're falling asleep.
Very
good. Then he is a man. He says there in verse 40, What? Could you not watch with me one hour? He's going to suffer and die for all of our sins. He's going to go through this agonizing and betrayal and everything. He knows all this, and yet they couldn't even donate one hour to atone. That is frustrating. Yes.
And the way that question is framed, when he says, could you not watch for one hour, the implied answer is, yes, you could.
Yes.
So it's not that they were unable, it's that they did not, because of the flesh.
I think it's another example of how the devil is working all the time. And we make the statement, well, the devil's working in that church, you know, working in the church the most because he's got everybody else or whatever. It's the same difference. I mean, you know, it was at a time whenever God needed them the most that they fell weak to temptation, which is, you know, Satan at hand. So,
you know, and when I ask if Jesus is angry, I don't necessarily mean that he had to have these terrible feelings toward the disciples. I think he could be angry at the flesh. I think he could be angry at what was being given into here in view of what's happening and how he's feeling about the whole situation. We see Jesus getting angry about things throughout the New Testament. And it's not always just, well, directly sin, but it can be the effects of sin. It's possible and probable that I think it's in Mark 1 or 2 where he heals a man. A lot of translations will put he felt compassion and healed him, but probably the better reading there is he got angry and healed him. Now we wonder, well, why would he be angry? Well, it's probably because he sees the effects of sin. He sees the effects of what has happened. And it's that he's angry. He's furious about what has happened. A strong word there. So Jesus gets angry at things that we might wonder, why is he angry? Well, it's because he sees the bigger picture. And he sees the spirit is willing, the flesh is weak. And so there may be some, at least disappointment, but there may be stronger emotion there.
Back, he sees them, he doesn't say anything, he goes back to pray. I remember a Bible study, he was going out, you know, the Spirit does not say anything, you're so hurt, you're so angry, you're so disappointed, you're distraught. and then, you know, he goes back to the college.
And if you look before we started our reading, we see that this is happened just within a short time after Peter had said, I will never deny you. And the other apostles said the same thing. And he knew that because already I would be disappointed even going into this.
Yes.
You know, you just said that you're not going to deny me and you're going to be this way.
Absolutely. And of course, Jesus knew the prophecy, strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. He knew they were all going to abandon him.
It's an example to me of you can be angry at the situation. And I think that's where Jesus was in the situation, not with people. He's not being angry with the people, but being angry at the situation and not saying.
And I think that's even commanded of us, at least my interpretation of Ephesians chapter 4. A lot of times we read it as, if you get angry, don't sin. Well, it's actually in the command form. It says, be angry, or get angry, and do not sin. And then later he says, but get rid of all anger. So what I think he's saying is two different situations in the various context of, there's some things you got to get angry about and deal with. But don't do it in a sinful way and deal with it quickly. And then he says, but as far as the evil, illicit anger, unrighteous anger, he says, get rid of that completely. And so Jesus seems to model that, that he gets angry at the right things and deals with it correctly.
It's a controlled anger. It's an attention getter. We know when he turned the tables over in the temple, he was very angry there too. But immediately went into teaching versus a rampage of a fit. He actually had a very controlled anger, which is where human, we fail at that. We let anger get the best of us, and we lose that control.
Very good. Yes?
I was reading something the other day about verse 39. And Jesus is saying, I will act according to your will, not my own. Which is a key lesson in the Bible is, when we go to act, do we act to our own will, which could lead to sin, or do we act according to the will of God and to Jesus? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a key verse.
Very good. You have a great point. You know, whatever Jesus was feeling in this, he was going to decide to do the will of God. Yes.
Jesus was
very
emotional stress at this time, he tells him his prayers to the Father. But the human side of him did not want to die, but he was willing to do the will of his Father. Mm-hmm. And I get a feeling that it's frustration, great frustration.
Yes.
Because of the stress he was under at this time. He keeps going back and finding them asleep when all he's asked of them is just to watch.
Absolutely. And you see kind of the personal direction of this. Sister Kate had pointed out that Simon had just said, I'll never betray. Well, Mark's rendition of this says, he addresses Peter directly and says, Simon, are you asleep? And so you've got some direct frustration here with the disciples that you could have done, I've asked you to do this, you know the state of my emotions right now, this is what you need to do, and you've fallen asleep and you keep on doing it. I don't know exactly what Jesus is feeling here, but obviously disappointment is one descriptor.
Things that they were guilty, and they didn't find it back, they didn't make excuses. Mm-hmm. They accepted.
Absolutely. There was nothing they could say. They knew they should have stayed awake with him. Yes?
Here, when he's only kind of an individual parent, he's exasperated with a 3-year-old. And there's four of them. I've seen this as recently as that. But it never stops for him.
Very good. And might we come back before we move on to the next question? That there's got to be some continued loneliness here, right? That, you know, he's feeling the frustration that they're not doing what he had said. He's disappointed in how they're acting. Then all the more, he's alone. And that's why he keeps going to the Father, because he's got no one else here with him. Even though they're present, a stone's throw away, they're not really there with him. All right. Let's go to Mark chapter 14. Mark chapter 14. This is a little bit before this occasion. Let's see. We've kind of alluded to it, but let's read verses 27 through 31. This gives us some context for the Gethsemane account. Who wants to read that for us? All right, Brother Curtis, thank you.
Okay, Mark chapter 14, verse 27. And Jesus says to them, "You will all fall away, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee." Jesus said to him, "Even though they all fall away, I will not." And Jesus said to him, "Truly I tell you, this very night, before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times." But he said emphatically, "If I must die with you, I will not deny you." And they all said the same.
All right. So we've kind of talked around this, but why might Peter's and the apostles' statement have been especially hurtful to Jesus at this point?
He knew they would.
He knew they would. He knew what was coming. What else? We can assume that it was just about every day for the past 3 years that they have been with Jesus. There's some changes where he sends them out and they have the limited commission, and probably they were able to go to various places. Maybe while they're back home, they can go to their own homes and those kind of things. But for the most part, they've been with Jesus. And then you have these things happen. Yes, Brother Mike?
We studied last week about the temptations of Jesus. He knew how strong temptation could be on the flesh. And he was trying to tell Peter that you don't understand how strong that temptation could be. You're answering very quickly, but you need to consider the temptation. Because given time and temptation, we don't know how it all goes. And Jesus knew that.
Very good. And I think about something that has happened before this occasion, that Jesus says, the devil has asked to sift you like wheat, but I have prayed for you. And I don't have my Greek Bible with me. There's something that happens there that he says, I think the devil had asked to sift all the disciples like wheat, but then he says, I prayed for you in the singular to Peter. I prayed for you, Peter. So Jesus has been praying for Peter. Peter says, I'm never going to deny you. And then Peter denies him. And Jesus looks up and Peter goes away.
I can't help but bring up, I was in a discussion with someone who was of the Catholic faith, and they were claiming Peter was the first pope. And they were also making the claim because he was with Jesus all these times, he was the first one to the tomb and all this stuff. And I brought up almost every one of these aspects and saying, well, even though Peter was the closest to him, as you claim, he's also seemed to be in denial and doubting and unbelieving and all the way through here. I said, so what kind of pope is that? That you place above the Catholic Church. That's what you're claiming faith to. Seemed to be an issue there.
All right. Any other thoughts?
I think he knew what was going to happen. But still, when he's with his men, and he's training them, and he's feeling like, hey, we're getting it, and then they're not. I think all the sort of feeling of accomplishment or progress sort of gets blown away, and you're sort of back to square one, maybe even worse, thinking, well, if all these things didn't help these guys figure this out, what can I possibly do?
Definitely, as a man, we might kind of feel those if we had invested so much and see the seemingly little fruit. I think Jesus had a little bit broader perspective that he could see what would happen, but in the moment, Jesus had to be feeling those disappointments. Somewhat of a side note, but something to consider sometimes, that in the Gospel of John, you have an interesting wordplay that Peter is warming himself by a charcoal fire when he denies Jesus and denies him three times. The only other time that that word charcoal fire is used is when Jesus is resurrected on the beach, builds a charcoal fire and says, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? So you have some interesting things going on there. Jesus is recreating the denial situation and says, what about you, Peter? Are you going to come back? And so you have some interesting things happen. So Jesus knows the situation. He knows what's going to happen. But you still have the disappointments even in the midst of it. Does anybody have any additional thoughts on that? Comments, questions?
And it's been brought up before when we've talked about it, but in Luke's gospel, after he does it the third time, apparently there's a close vicinity between where Jesus is and where Peter is, because it said the meeting while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. In verse 61, it says, the Lord turned and looked at Peter, and Peter remembered the word of the Lord, and began to weep. So the Lord, Jesus was at least in earshot, that he could see Peter, or at least hear him, and say that Peter is denying him. He's like, you not even see where I'm even at? You're still denying me. I'm this close to you, but you're still denying me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Jesus, of course, loved everyone in the world. But I would say Peter, James, and John are his closest friends here on earth. I mean, we don't like the idea of cliques or groups, but they're not necessarily wrong in and of themselves. You have your closest friends, and these men are his closest friends. Extend that to the rest of the apostles, and then to all the disciples, and then to the whole world. But Jesus is closest to these men. He invests the most into these men. They get to see the transfiguration. They get to come into the garden and pray with him. And yet they're the ones, Peter especially, is denies him.
When Peter made the statement that he would stand by Jesus, to me it was like at a time when he was not afraid. Mm-hmm. He felt stronger. But when the actual time came, he was afraid and weak. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't stand up against it. And was he lying to Jesus? Not really, but I think Jesus saw his weaknesses before it happened.
Absolutely. Very good. And Peter didn't react. I mean, you see maybe some level of bravery when he pulls out the sword and is ready to fight for Jesus. But Jesus is saying, that's not the way we're going to handle this. And Peter abandons after that, you know. Well, we're not doing it the human way, then I'm not doing it.
The amount of loveliness that Jesus had to feel. I mean, here are your closest friends. And he's cursing even so much as cursing that close to Jesus. And saying how that had to hurt. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to kind of picture that using maybe 21st century terms, you've got this man who has been with you, has been a disciple, your closest friend, and the equivalent to that word, he was cursing and swearing. He's saying, I promise you, I do not know this man, if you can have degrees of profanity, I hate GD the worst. That's what he's saying. He's saying, beat you, I don't know the man. That's the strength of the terms that are used with that Peter is using. He's going so far the opposite direction. He's bringing divine curses upon these people for saying, you know Jesus. It really brings the situation alive for me.
You touched on a good point. We have a support group in the church. God designed it that way. Jesus had a support group of his apostles. As a human, we know he had to have times of weakness, although we looked at him as a pillar and strength. But when he went to pray in the garden, he was suffering, agony, and all that. And he needed these men for support. And that's the thing. He had to lean on them because he'd been teaching them when it's time for strength. But in weakness, he decided he needed to be with them too for support. Right. That's the thing we look at with the church.
Mm-hmm. And we'll have to move on here to finish up, but the thing that's interesting is all the disciples abandoned him, but after that third time of praying, you see the resolution of Jesus, that he's got the Father on his side, and he's going to do whatever the Father wants him to do. And so, I think there is a lesson there, that even in the midst of disappointment, even if everyone abandons us, we never lose God. And that seems to be the lesson that comes from Jesus, and there's been a lot of discussion on what it meant that my God, why have you forsaken me? But I think we do need to temper that phrase by Jesus saying in the Gospel of John, Before his betrayal and arrest, he says, "The Father has never left me and never will leave me." And so you have some, Jesus is relying on God through all of it, and that's why he can say, "Into your hands I commit my spirit," because there's still a fellowship there that cannot be broken. Alright, let's go on. One more disappointment of Jesus, John chapter 7. We don't have time to read it, but just scan through real quick. Does anyone remember who rejects Jesus in John chapter 7, or who thought he was crazy? His own family. Some have said, well, it's just his brothers or just his sisters. They don't really want to impugn the character of Mary, but she seems to be involved here in some way. And I think she still followed him. She's there at the cross, but there's still some things happening with his mother. His brothers and sisters are trying to take him away. And how do you think Jesus would have felt in that scenario? How would we have felt if you're doing the will of God and your family's saying, you're crazy?
Betrayed.
Very good. What else?
Torn.
Think about, you know, there was 3 years of that, and I always think about Noah. You know, he was years of being different and, you know, staying firm to what God told him to do. And, you know, he exalted all resources to try to get people to understand. So that took a lot longer than what Jesus had. So, you know, in that time frame, just to have your family to turn on you, wow.
Absolutely.
The worldly side of it, he got back at him because later they said, your brothers, your mother and your sister got slain. He said, who are my mother and sister? Mm-hmm. He understood, they didn't understand what his duty was.
His mission led him in a different direction, and different relationships were important to him. And so in a sense, you do see Jesus modeling his teaching of you have to leave father, mother, sister, brother,
yes,
if they're not going in the right direction.
Well, lately, a rejection of Jesus is happening today. Because even in the news, they're talking about schools and universities rejecting Christianity. Mm-hmm. And you know, how I feel about it, you know, I feel hurt by that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, after all this time, there's a rejection of Christianity. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why. I don't know.
I don't know. And even closer to home, I was thinking about what a preacher said one time. I can't remember who the preacher was, so I can't source him correctly. But he talked about an older woman that he looked up to, and she would stand up whenever people would say, OMG. She would say, please don't talk about my God that way. I mean, there's some loyalty and some hurt whenever we see these things happening around us. So Jesus, obviously, he's on a different mission, but there had to be some hurt in this rejection. I don't know if this plays into the scenario, but Jesus is the firstborn. Who's responsible for the mother if the father dies? What did Jesus do? He left. He left the home. Now, Jesus obviously cares for his mother, and even in his death, leaves her in the charge of not his brother James, but in the care of John, and so who is possibly his cousin, by the way. But you have some things happening here that you have to feel the hurt of Jesus as he is being rejected by his family. All right, quick application. Could someone either read or quote Philippians 4, 6 through 7?
Just don't worry about anything. Mm-hmm. Let your request be made known to God. Mm-hmm. And the peace of God passes all understanding to guard your hearts and minds through Christ.
Very good. Absolutely. With some of this in our mind, where he says, don't be anxious about anything, don't worry about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication, let your request be made known to God. When we think about that, what are some of the biggest disappointments we face in life?
Much smaller in comparison.
They are much smaller in comparison to what Jesus faced. You don't have to get specific, but what are some things?
I know that they're smaller in comparison, obviously, no question. But at the same time, my disappointment is really big to me. Mm-hmm. My disappointment is big to you. Everybody's is big to them. So to them, on an individual basis, it may be big and hard to cope with, and it may, you know, take me down. Who you compare to other things, it may not be anything, but on an individual basis, it's just as difficult.
Absolutely. You know, I don't see anywhere where, I mean, sometimes God says your disappointment is not a good disappointment. He tries to take us in a different direction. But I don't ever see when there's true disappointment where God says whitewash the situation. I look at Job, I look at Jesus, I mean, they, and look at the Psalms, they dealt with real disappointments. And I would suggest that if it's important to us, then it's probably important to God too, how we're feeling. Brother Ryan?
You know, I see a lot of two different complete extremes in your emotions. That is, when you have that anxiety, that worry, go. You're moving pretty quick, your brain is worried about this, and then all of a sudden it comes to the point where you hit that cliff, the emotions fall off, the tears are there, sorrow is there, and you begin praying. You've got completely two different extremes here. I just can't help every time I read this to think that he's telling you, when you come to me in prayer and supplication and thanksgiving, these are the emotions you should have.
You know, aren't we also hurt by our friends and our family? Don't we also get rejected? Don't we, and I'm speaking in broad terms, don't we lose jobs? Don't we lose family members, people we loved? There's all kinds of disappointments in this life, and you know what? That's what it means to live in the world. In this world, you will have tribulation. There's persecution as well associated with that. But Jesus' promise in John 16 is, even though there in this world you have tribulation, what does he say? I have overcome the world. And so Jesus is the example. And so I would suggest that, yes, it is possible not to worry, at least as Paul has it in his mind. There are disappointments. Yes, we have anxiety. Yes, we have concerns. But it is possible to turn those worries over to God. And so let me ask one final question here. For you personally, how does Jesus most help you through your disappointments? Brother Mike?
That's easy. He teaches us to depend on Him, to focus on Him. And all these things in the world will pass away. If we focus on serving and doing what He required us to do, we can have that home in heaven. That's where we focus at, farther down the road. And these things will all seem trivial. They won't cause us anxiety and stress.
This momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory. So hope helps us through. Brother Brian and then Brother Don.
For me, it's to look at what's the lesson that I need to learn here? You know, what do I need to learn and to be that light? Did I go through this so that I could be that light for someone else and bring them to God? Is that what this is? So I can say, you can get through this because I've been there with you and let me help you.
Yeah, James tells us that these tribulations can do something for us. They can work in us for our perseverance and character. Brother Don?
In 2 Corinthians 12, when Paul had the thorn in the flesh, really concerned about it, he prayed three times. And then Jesus' answer is, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. And I think we need to think about that and internalize it. And realize that we have every blessing in Christ, and we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us.
Get over here in just a second, but if we're cataloging, that means we've got hope, we've got perspective, we've got prayer, we've got grace. I think you're next.
I think one of the biggest disappointments is that those that will not follow the Bible. And we, as Christians, stick with Jesus. And the Bible tells us, no matter what, stick with Jesus, and it'll help us get through all this.
Absolutely. So commitment also helps us through.
Well, Don, I said what I was going to say. I can do all things through Christ. Has helped me through many problems, mm-hmm. and things in my life. And you're right, it makes you stronger, mm-hmm. you know, when you go through it. And you just have to know that Jesus is with you and will help you. And you can get through anything with Him.
So we might also add to our list, we've got divine strength helps us, and maybe even expand that generally, that Scripture helps us.
There's a song called I'm No Stranger to the Rain, and one of the lyrics that Keith really sings is, but through it all, I withstood the pain. You should look at what Jesus had to endure. He got rejected by the chief priests and the scribes. He got rejected by his family. He lost his friend Lazarus, as Don mentioned, many other things you can mention. And he was able to still complete his mission here on earth, to testify to the truth and to die for all of our sins.
Very good. So maybe seeing the example of Jesus, that he did it, we can do it too. I think there was... All right, we can do two more comments, so let's do Charlotte and then Ryan.
When I've been, I have a hard time with anxiety. I was trying to through some things. And now I'm in my deepest anxiety and so much pain. Or when I have been so disappointed or hurt by someone. And I can remember a very specific time frame. He was my security blanket. And it was hard to come to the realization some things aren't going to change. But my comfort was knowing that he knew about it. He knew about it. Like what Mike said, down the road it's going to be okay. And he doesn't always take our thorns away. But I knew he heard me and he saw me. And it was like crawling up in the middle of the blanket.
Yeah.
He's going to be okay.
Yeah, that security from Jesus helps us. And Ryan, last comment.
You know, whenever we're in this area of disappointment, we easily established, we can see the disappointment that Jesus had many, many times. We get that same thing. So what we need to do is focus on how we come out of that. We see that prayer, thanksgiving does that as well. But the example we see in Jesus is he picked up the cross. He walked. He fell. He got back up. We need to do the same thing. So we have those disappointments. How do we overcome them? Focus on the cross. Pick it up and move.
So we can deal with the problems through prayer, but you bring up a good point, and I think this is the advice God gave to Elijah as well, is you've got some work to do. And so when we get busy with the work of God, that will help us through these disappointments. Last thing, very quickly, you've got one or two sentences. What did we learn about Jesus today?
All of the above.
All of the above.
He endures.
He endures. Very good. And thus we can do. All right. Appreciate everyone's participation today. Next week, we're going to continue with the life of Jesus. And that lesson is... what was that one? I've got the next few lessons mingled in my mind. So I'll have to plead that I do not know what the next lesson is. But anyway, we'll get into that next time. Appreciate everyone's participation.